Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Couple of messages coming in, and Teresa, you tell us there's absolute chaos this morning in Salins Village with cars dropping students to buses and lack of spaces for buses to park, etc. Drivers not able to drop students. We're going to be dealing with that topic at around 9:45 this morning with Irish Water to find out what's going on there, and Councillor Carmel Kelly from Salins as well will be joining us. Simon says, on the subject of vaccines, how many months do you have to wait to get the booster? Because I had COVID in November, so cold I could get the booster now. Simon, you could check with the HSE in regards, because I can't comment on people's specific circumstances. There might be one reason why you can get it that I can't get it, or in reverse, or whatever else. So check with the HSE, text them and ask them that question. Mick and Mead says, I agree with you. Each person has a right to make their own minds up on vaccination, and in that way we wouldn't be blocking up hospitals. Novak is setting a bad example by refusing vaccination again. I agree with the Australian government rules are rules, and for all, no exemptions. He's nothing special. And on that note, keep your messages coming. I think you know the numbers. 0833 97 97 97, WhatsApp or text. Email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can speak to us on the phones to Cuiva on 045 898 999. The poverty risk of households in receipt of housing subsidies is 2.5 times greater. That's 150%, I make it, after they have paid their rent. That's according to Social Justice Ireland's latest study titled Housing and Poverty 2022, which is published this very morning. Economic and social analyst with Social Justice Ireland, author of the report, is Colette Bennett. Good morning, Colette.
Good morning, Clint.
Thank you for joining us. I suppose, Colette, it's a very comprehensive report. I've been reading the advanced copy. I've got it since yesterday. I suppose the one thing to explain first, we talk a lot about poverty, but we never ask the question exactly. Define poverty.
Yes, so that's a really good place to start for this report particularly. So essentially, the CSO, the Central Statistics Office, they run a survey every single year. So this one is in relation to 2020. And it's our national and our EU measure of poverty. So what they do is they take poverty as being 60% of the equivalized median income. And essentially what that means is that if you take everybody from the lowest income to the highest income and you put them in a row like that, you take the middle, the very middle income there, and you get 60% of that.
And could you put an approximate figure in euro on that as to...
Put an exact figure in euro on that. For a one adult household, you're looking at 14,205 a year. So you're looking at 273, just over 273 euro a week. And you'll note that if we look at the social welfare rates back in 2020 at 203, you're talking over 70 euro more than the basic social welfare rate.
So 270 a week, below that you're on the poverty line. That's a single person household.
That's right.
Just give me the two-person version of that then. Would it be just double that?
Hardly. It's not. So the way they calculate it is they do what they call equivalized. So for every second, every subsequent adult, it's 66% of that. And for every child, it's 33%. So if you say two adults and two kids, for example, that's 633.76 a week.
So that's about 30,000 a year, is it?
Almost 33.
Okay, below that you're deemed to be officially on the poverty line. All right, that's an interesting one, particularly in relation to a single person. That if your income is below 272 a week, you're on the poverty line. But I don't want to get into this too deeply now. But wouldn't a person on that low level of income already be eligible to receive quite a number of supplements, whether it's free fuel, free electricity, other supports?
They would have other supplements, and that actually brings us to one of the key outputs from this piece of research that we did, is that the fact that people on a very, very low income would also be eligible for social housing doesn't stop them falling further into poverty once they pay their rent element on their social housing.
And so your report says that renters, in fact, are the worst affected, with 44.7% at risk of poverty after housing payments. You talk in your report about the failure of housing supplements, housing costs, poverty and tenure, which is security of tenure. People being, you know that they're not going to be turfed out of their home and so on. You've quite a considerable amount of stuff in regards to housing in your report.
We do. So this report is particularly focused on housing and poverty. And one of the really striking things was those households that are living in private rented accommodation but getting subsidies, so the housing assistance payment, the rental accommodation scheme or the rent supplement. So set aside the social housing part of it. These are what's called social housing solutions. Their poverty rate goes from 22.7%, so just over 1 in 5, to 55.9%, so that's more than 1 in 2.
Right,
that's people who are living, that are on a low income, that have been deemed by the state to be eligible for a subsidy for their accommodation. And after their rent element, after the portion that they pay of their rent, their poverty rate goes up 150%.
And you also outline how lone parents are 50% of those are living below the poverty line after housing costs. And children, a quarter of children are living below the poverty line after housing costs. Those who would be in these housing assisted supported housing situation.
So that's all children. So when we look at the overall number, the poverty rate overall in 2020 was 13.2%. Mm-hmm. That jumped to 19%. Now, just to put that in context, that's almost 1 million people in poverty after we take account of mortgage interest and rent. So that's more than 1 in 5 people at 2020.
Now, it's not just those on income. It's compounded by the fact if you're not in good health as well.
Absolutely. So again, we've always seen very high rates of poverty for people living with disabilities, and this is no exception. Again, there's a very high poverty rate and another jump for people who have a disability and who are living with disability. Those who are unable to work due to those long-standing health problems have a poverty rate after their housing costs of 47.4%. So again, almost 1 in 2.
You make a very interesting point in the report, actually. I was intrigued about this. It's on page 5, calculating the cost of housing poverty, that almost €2 in every €5 spent on housing by the state ends up being allocated to make up for the way poverty damages people's lives. Just flesh that out a little for me.
Absolutely. So back in 2020, the St. Vincent de Paul actually commissioned a piece of research by the UCD social policy academic Micheál Collins, and it was called the Hidden Cost of Poverty, and it drives into a number of different areas that poverty costs, particularly costs the state. So just looking at the housing element of it, 38% of housing expenditure by the state is actually spent on ways in which poverty affects people's lives, and it's things like these housing subsidies that we're talking about. So, you know, if we alleviate poverty, we would actually be saving the state money, as opposed to constantly spending this kind of current expenditure, this ongoing expenditure, trying to address the impact of
poverty. And I suppose what arises from all that and what you've just said there, if we alleviate poverty, it will, if you like, reduce the impact of all of those. What then are the solutions to reducing poverty? You talk about housing policy priorities.
Absolutely. So generally speaking, we need to provide an income for people that they have that safety net, and that income has to be sufficient. And I mean, I'm sure you know our work in this area in relation to basic income, for example. We've advocated for decades for universal basic income and for benchmarking of social welfare rates generally. But in terms specifically in relation to housing, we need to start building and start providing more social housing, real social housing, not social housing solutions and subsidies, but actual social housing owned by local authorities or by approved housing bodies. Because that would release anywhere between 60 and 95,000 private rented units back into the market. And that would then obviously have a knock-on effect for private rents. So tenants in private rented accommodation would actually see either a stabilising or a potential decrease in their rent payment.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because that's on a day during our newspaper review this morning we highlighted the fact that housing costs in Dublin, this was a report in the Irish Times this morning, that second-hand houses in Dublin have gone up 45,000 in just 1 year. And that's the most populated part of the country where more social housing is needed. It's a very thought-provoking report by Social Justice Ireland, and it's called Housing and Poverty 2022. You can read the details behind it on their website, socialjustice.ie. And author of that report, economic and social analyst with Social Justice Ireland, Colette Bennett. Thank you again for your time, Colette.
Thank you so much.
Very, very useful report. Catherine Murphy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Clem.
Now, Catherine, on the topic of your co-leader of the Social Democrats in Kildare North TD, on Friday we spoke to Susan Gray of Park, the campaign on road safety, and she revealed that just one in four people brought to court for driving while using their mobile phones are being convicted. Now, she based her information, and she acknowledged that on the programme, of a parliamentary question put by yourself. But she also revealed the astonishing statistic that of 135 cases brought to court in 2020 in County Kildare, there wasn't a single conviction. Now, I accept that COVID was pretty rampant and many of those might have been deferred. But across the years 2018 to 2020, it's only one in four being convicted.
Yes. I work quite closely with the Park Group, and you'll know they would have been, in most cases, impacted themselves by a road tragedy, and this is part of what they do to try and make sure no other family experience it. So I've asked a lot of questions and worked closely with them, and I got this information via the Department of Justice from the Court Service, and essentially it's something like there's a variety of different outcomes depending on what district court you appear in front of.
But let me ask you one question, Catherine, because I put it to Susan on Friday, and obviously she didn't want to comment so much on the reasons, but what's going on in the courts? I also spoke with the GRA Deputy Vice President on Friday on the programme, and he spoke about the frustration of Gardaí. He said the Gardaí's job is to do their job, but it is very, very frustrating that when then all these cases go to court, for some reason only one in four get convicted.
Yeah. And it's, in fact, it's 19% in Kildare. It's lower than the national average over the 2018 to 2020 statistics. And in fact, you're twice as likely to be convicted if you appear, or nearly twice as likely to be convicted if you appear in front of Wicklow. I can understand the frustration of the Gardaí. We ask them to detect the crime, but the criminal justice system is more than just finding people. It's also about the treatment in court.
But there's a loophole in the process, because as I outlined on Friday, the old days a Gardaí gave you a ticket, and therefore there was physical evidence that the Garda could produce that you had been handed this ticket and so on and so forth. Nowadays, when the guard stops you, they record the details electronically, advise you might be prosecuted, and we've people going into court saying, well, I never got the letter.
Yeah, to be honest with you, these ones do actually end up in court, but some of them are dismissed or they're struck out, but there's no obligation on the courts to actually give a reason for that, and there's nothing then recorded as to, we don't have any understanding of why this is happening and why there's such a variety. Now, I'm all in favour of there being a degree of discretion in the courts, because, for example, on speeding, you could be marginally above the speed limit, or you could be twice over the speed limit, and you have to have that discretion. This wouldn't be the case of handheld mobile devices when people are driving. And in fact, not only just are they holding the device, sometimes they're texting. But there's too much of a variety across the various district courts that something will have to be done.
Well, what can be done? You're a legislator.
Well, Yeah, well, essentially, there's a degree of judge training that is required, and these kind of statistics are a reminder of that. That that there is an inconsistency across across the court service. All we can do is appeal for greater judge training. I know there have been changes to the court service in a recent piece of legislation that allows for a higher level of. Judge training, but we need to see the outcomes being consistent. It's completely wrong that you end up in front of one court and have a different outcome. We're supposed to have an equality in front of
absolutely.
The law.
On that point, Catherine Murphy, thank you for joining us this morning. Happy New Year to you, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine.
Co-leader of the Social Democrats in Kildare North TD. It's an astonishing case, and again, for those who didn't hear Friday, in 2020, of 135 cases brought before the courts for holding a mobile phone, there was not a single conviction. I acknowledge some of those could have been deferred, postponed or whatever else, but it's also happening in 2018, 2019, 2020, that only one in four on average across the country are actually convicted. Morning Clem says, a listener, I see from February they're going to double fines for parking on bus lanes and cycle lanes. I wonder will they ever fine all the cyclists going through red lights and not using cycling lanes? Thanks, it's Bill actually. Happy New Year to you and your wonderful team. Came up the good work. And also, could we appeal to cycling groups. Again, I saw about 20 of them yesterday out getting their morning exercise, and that's fine and great. But to be honest with you, when they string out in a very, very long line, two abreast, it can often pose a great, great danger to people who are trying to pass them in cars, to themselves and to the motorists. So could these groups who go cycling, could they not sort of break up into three, four smaller groups and leave a space, a considerable space, where cars could overtake them one group at a time? I think you know what I'm talking about. Clem, will you wish our sister Rosalind Kelly a very happy birthday? The best sister ever. And one of the best. It comes from Babs, Alice, Andy and Mary Donnelly.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
In regards to Simon's inquiry about having had COVID, when could he get a booster? Brendan in Talla has been in touch. How are you, Brendan? If you've had COVID, you have to wait 3 months before you get the booster. That's the current HSE information. I too had COVID in November, says Brendan, and I've checked it out. Well, that's useful. Our listeners are always great to bring us up to date on information. Mary says, I would love to know the comparisons with other EU members in the areas of rent support and all social welfare payments. We seem to shovel out money at the drop of a hat. Over to Kira.
Yes, I'm joined on the line now by Councillor Angela Feeney of Labour and of the Clanmaynooth Municipal District area. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Kira, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very much. Listen, we're going to start in Strafford. You did ask the Council to consider assigning a school warden to the national school there. And exactly why did you ask for a school warden to be assigned?
Yeah, Kira, that's right. And the reason I submitted the motion is that parents have been in touch with me about this. There's a very large volume of traffic going up and down that road every morning and afternoon at drop-off and collection times. And, you know, a large number of children cross over that busy road. And many parents have reported incidents and near misses that they're, you know, they're genuine concerns. And the population is growing in Strathen. And, you know, it's only a matter of time they feel that there's an accident. So I submitted it, and there was a safety to school audit carried out by the school recently as well.
Now, the council did say that there was no requirement for a warden.
Yeah, I wasn't at all happy with the reply from the council on this. Look, I acknowledge the fact that our MD is the first run in January and the motions are submitted over the Christmas period. So I acknowledge the fact that there might have been reduced staff and so on. But the council did apologise at the meeting and said that they'd give me a more comprehensive response and that it is warranted. So I will wait for that, Kira.
And you've any idea when you'll get that, Angela?
Oh, I presume that'll be very soon because the staff is back in now and, you know, we're working full whack. So hopefully I'll get that very soon.
Yeah, do keep us updated, please. You also asked the council to inform the members as to what it plans for the vacated current fire station at Maynooth.
Yeah, I mean, given that the planned construction of the new station near Lidl is happening, you know, next year, and I reminded the council that, you know, I submitted a motion around this time last year, and I suggested that the council should consider this vacated site to be used for a much-needed and long-overdue community centre for Maynooth. And, you know, given that the site, Ciara, is right in the town centre, close to the harbour field, the playground, it's an ideal location for a community centre. And at previous meetings, I also suggested other possible sites, such as the vacated, you know, post-primary school in Maynooth, another great location. You know, while the written report that they gave me said that there were no plans as yet for the vacated portion of the site, there was a good discussion generated at the meeting, and the area manager, in fairness to her, has agreed to consider this suggestion and to meet with us and councillors to discuss the issue for Maynooth. So there's light at the end of the tunnel finally, Ciara. I feel that we might finally get this much-needed community centre for Maynooth.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Okay, you've asked for an update on the planned volumetric framework housing development. That's at Old Greenfield, also in Maynooth.
That's right. And this update was really great to have, you know, especially for all those people waiting on the social housing list. So the council said that in November just gone, the council housing department submitted a stage two capital application to the Department of Housing for this development. Look, it would be 65 housing units, and a mix of 1, 2, 3 and 4 bed units and different mix of house types. Mm-hmm. So the council said as soon as they get that response back from the department, and hopefully it'll be approved, that the proposed scheme will proceed to a part 8 this year. So that's really good news, Ciara.
And do they have any timeline as to when they'd hear from the department on that, Angela?
I think it's very imminent. I think it should be at the latest, you know, February, March. So that's really, you know, good news. And to see this site, which, Ciara, it's a fantastic location right beside the town, the train station, the motorway. So it would be great to see, especially for those people, as I say, who are waiting on the housing list.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Councillor Angela Feeney of Labour and of Clane Maynooth MD. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Ciara, and thanks.
Thanks indeed, Angela, and for your kind greetings over Christmas, and also thanks to you, Ciara, for that. Now, before we proceed to the Salon situation, because really, there's significant disruption there this morning, and we'll be joined by a councillor from the area in a minute, and also from a resident, a representative of Irish Water, who will also tell us about that boiled water notice issued for the Monastereven water supply, which services Kilberry, Kildangan, North Athy, and Monastereven, of course, which that boiled water notice came into place over the weekend. But I have an email from a listener, and it's good morning to you, Alexei Doreshkinov. I hope I got your name correctly there. My daughter came back home after second day of school with high temperature. Antigen test is negative. She said that even during the snow on Friday, I presume, the windows in the class were open, and before the rain was leaving stains in her copybook as it came through the window during class. Questions for the Department of Education and the Doyle in general, says Alexei. 1. Don't we negatively impact immunity of children introducing drafts and low temperatures in classes, which often helps to contract the common cold, which in turn makes it easier for COVID to spread? 2. Did not see any sessions of government where windows would be open and they would sit in their coats and earmuffs. Why do they treat our children much worse than yourselves? Great point. Great point. I don't know. Are there any windows in Dáil Éireann? But no, you don't see the lads and lassies in their overcoats and woolies. 3, says Alexei. The school is relatively new. If there is an insufficient ventilation in classes, who should be held responsible? Architects, regulatory commissions, builders, or all of the above? Hope you can bring those points to the attention of the mighty. I think you've done a great, great job, Alexei Doreshkinov, in bringing those particular points. And yes, anybody who has ever worked in schools, as I did, will know that before there was ever COVID, with the windows closed and the heating system on, if you're sitting for most of the day, you can be frozen. And the idea of kids sitting in classes now with windows wide open as a means of ensuring ventilation, as opposed to having the kind of HEPA filters and everything else we would want, is certainly, could be described as amusing. Now let's indeed continue, because I'm joined by Olive Marshall, who's Wastewater Regional Lead with Irish Water. Good morning to you, Olive.
Good morning, how are you?
I hope you have the windows in your office open.
We're still working from home, actually.
Yeah. We're bringing a sledgehammer to the studio windows here just to begin. But yeah, the next time we look at Dáil Éireann, just to see, is there anybody...
See if any of them sitting in their coats.
Coats and jackets, yeah, like the poor kids of the nation. Very good point that's been raised there. Right, let's start with the wastewater, the boil water notice for the Monastrevin water supply first. Olive, what's going on there?
What's going on? As I said, already, I'm actually wastewater, so I'm not an expert in the drinking water end of things, but I have got some information for you on this. So as I understand it, the disinfection process in the plant in Monastrevin, there's a fault with it on Saturday, which impacted the chlorination process. So in conjunction with the HSE, Irish Water immediately issued a precautionary boiled water notice. So it's to, number one priority is to protect public health. So that was issued on Saturday afternoon. So Irish Water have been working with our colleagues in Kildare County Council, I think, all over the weekend to resolve this. So they're flushing through the system and working through it. And now they'll start sampling. And once there is enough samples, accurate samples that they can lift the boiled water notice. So
yeah, before I hand you over to Owen, we got notified of this on Saturday, and it's affecting 5,700 users in the Monastrevin, Kildangan, Kilberry, and parts of North Athy. And the drinking water compliance and operational experts are working with colleagues in Kildare County Council, it says, in regards to that. We have it up on our website, by the way, in the news section, all the details in regards to what's going on for that boil water notice. So, Owen, now the issue of salins. We'll have more, and I'll come back on the boil water notice later on after I check out just the overall details altogether. It says, in fact, I have it now, due to a fault with the disinfection system at Monastrevin treatment plant, the drinking water quality entering the Monastrevin public water supply has been affected. As a result, following consultation with the HSE, Irish Water and Kildare County Council have issued a boil water notice with immediate effect to protect the health of consumers. It applies to all consumers by the Monastrevin using the Monastrevin water supply in Monastrevin, Kildangan, Kilberry, and parts of the North Athy. All consumers affected by this notice must boil their water before drinking. Water must be boiled, rolling boil for 1 minute and then cooled for drinking. Preparing drinks made with water, preparation of salads and similar foods which are not cooked prior to eating, brushing of teeth and or gargling, making of ice. However, ensure you first discard all existing ice cubes in fridges and freezers and filtered water in fridges. Boil water by bringing to a vigorous rolling boil and allow to cool. Cover and store in a refrigerator or cold place. Water from the hot tap or kitchen or bathroom sinks is not safe to drink. You do not have to boil your water for the following: personal hygiene, baths and showers, flushing of toilets, water plants and flowers. Caution is urged with domestic water filters will not render the water safe to drink. Caution should be taken when bathing children to ensure they do not swallow the bathing water. Discard ice cubes in fridges, freezers. Make ice from cooled, boiled water. If you have pets and are concerned about the impact of providing mains water while this boiled water notice is in place, you should ask your local vet for advice. I would suggest that you boil the water, let it cool, and give that to your pets. Not even your pests. Only use prepared water for the following situations: when preparing foods that will not be cooked, washing and preparing salads, preparing infant formula. Where a boiled water notice is in place, you can prepare infant formula from tap water that has been boiled once for at least 1 minute rolling boil and cooled beforehand. Bottled water can also be used to make up infant formula. All bottled water, with the exception of natural mineral water, is regulated to the standard. You're urged to take care. And how long will the boiled water notice last, do you know, Olive?
We don't know. We can't give a definitive answer on that just yet. So they're still flushing, and then they'll start sampling. So once they start sampling, we won't know until that's done.
Right. Anybody who wants to get in touch can call the Irish Water Customer Contact Centre. It's a free phone number, 1-800-278-278. That's 1-800-278-278. Any further information, I'll offer you after Owen and Olive discuss what's going on in Salins. Owen.
Good morning, Olive. Sallins Wastewater Network to receive upgrading, which actually started this morning. Sallins, Clane, Naas, Newbridge and Kill were served by a wastewater network which was no longer fit for purpose, Irish Water saying, leading to overflows and flooding during the storm. So before you let us know what exactly is happening in Sallins, just give us a bit of background about the wastewater network.
So this is a project I've spoken with you before on a few occasions. So it's the Upper Liffey Valley 2B sewerage scheme. So it represents some 38 million investments within the network of the towns of Naas, Newbridge, Clane, Sallins and Kill. And it probably know the populations of those areas grew significantly over the decades. There's been big development there. So this investment would allow for the building of houses, for schools and development of industry, and it'll also safeguard the environment. And Coffees have been working there over the last few years on the scheme, so we'd like to thank your listeners for their ongoing patience and support throughout the project. So I guess they've a lot of the network complete in Naas and Newbridge. I think there's a small element of pipeline left in Craddockstown. The bulk of the kind of heavy work to the main towns of Naas and Newbridge and Clane are complete, so we're now moving to Sallins. And probably the reason Sallins was left to later is we were waiting until the bypass was complete. And once that would make the diversion routes, it's difficult as it stands, but it would have been far more difficult if the bypass wasn't there. And we also wanted to wait until after Christmas to give the traders enough space to operate over Christmas.
So we'll deal with the traffic management in a moment, and we have a local councillor on that we can talk about that. But just tell us about the construction of the new wastewater network then, what exactly it is and how long it's going to take.
So this element of the works in Sallins is some 300 metres of pipework. So it's a 450 diameter pipeline. So it's quite a big, large pipeline, and it's quite deep in places. It goes to a depth of 4 metres. So it's kind of relieving. There would have been surcharge and within the network there, and these larger pipes are laid, and they're diverting flows down through the bypass. So there was a pipeline laid when the bypass was being constructed, and it'll bring them to the pumping station in Sallins, which in turn pumps on to Osberstown. So it would give relief to the network within the town allow it to stop. It'll stop the overflows happening at such a frequent basis and allow for development.
Okay, so Irish Water says that phase one will begin today. It's scheduled to be completed on the 23rd of January, with phase two beginning on the 24th of January and scheduled for completion on the 13th of February, and then phase three beginning on the 14th of February and scheduled for completion on the 6th of March. So on that, wastewater regional lead with Irish Water, Olive Marshall, thanks for that. And Carmel Kelly joins me now. She's a Fianna Fáil.
Can I come in just there before you start with Carmel? Because we've had a call from a listener that says, "Good morning, Clem. This comes from Trees and Sallins, and it's a very long text, and I'm just going to summarise it." She says, "There was chaos there this morning," and she said, "Thank God I don't use the ring road. Can this work not be done overnight? Why is it down tools at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? And it must be insisted that the space at Marin's Garage in Gala is not allowed to be used to park work vehicles. This space must be left free in order for students to be dropped and collected safely. This would not be allowed in any other country," says Teresa Owen.
Okay, let's go to Carmel Kelly then. She's a local councillor based in Sallins of the Naas Municipal District. Carmel, good morning.
Good morning, Owen. My initial reaction, look, is bottom line, the works are necessary, but look, it's going to be messy. It's going to be inconvenient, and it's going to cause people longer journeys to get everywhere through Sallins. But my message is, bear with us. Sallins is open for business, and Sallins is open. I live in Sallins Bridge. For the next few weeks, I am not going to be able to turn left and go through Sallins and get to Naas that way. But as Olive rightly said, the bypass is open. It is going to cause chaos. The first morning, my phone has been going since 7 o'clock because Coffees were on the ground at 7 o'clock this morning. And the first morning, yes, there are issues. And while Olive is on there, if I may, Olive, and good morning, Olive.
Good morning.
Could I ask for, I would say to people, the Irish Water website has the details. But Olive, could I ask, the last update was on the 5th of January where it gave notice that this work was starting. Could so I ask that once a week that it be updated?
Can
you include
yeah.
the maps as well, please?
Okay,
because
yeah.
I think a picture paints 1,000 words. You can say the junction at Lidl is closed for this week, but if you, those maps that you issued to the businesses and in around the particular areas on the Silence Road are excellent maps, and I've tried to get them out there on all my social media if anybody wants to look at them. But I would ask that if you could get up them updated, put them on the Irish Water website.
Yeah, can I
and also yeah. my other third thing is the bus routes, Olive. Again, my first calls this morning were from parents. Where are the buses stopping? Now, I know where they are, but God, I need somebody to put them on maps.
Well, ladies, Olive and Carmel, if I come in there, according yep. to Teresa, she said there was absolute chaos in Sellens Village this morning with cars dropping students to buses and lack of space for the buses to park, plus the drivers were not able to tell her whether they'd be stopping dropping students back there. Olive?
Yeah, we did. We had an ongoing consultation with the bus companies, and the bus